Staying in Europe, we turn now to Spain, which right now suffers from Europe's highest unemployment rate, with nearly one in four people out of work. The country has dipped back into recession, and layoffs are on the rise. But there's one organization that's still hiring, the Catholic Church. Lauren Freyer reports from Madrid on a savvy campaign by some bishops to recruit new priests from the swelling ranks of Spain's unemployed.
The 2.5-minute video starts with words emerging from a smoky background.
¿Cuántas promesas te han hecho?
How many promises have they made to you which haven't been fulfilled, a voice asks. Then a young priest pops up.
Yo no te prometo un gran sueldo.
I don't promise you a big salary, he says. I promise you a permanent job. Young priests speak into the camera one after another, mixed with footage of them marrying people, praying over a hospital bed and to a man behind bars.
No te prometo que vayas a tener grandes lujos.
I don't promise luxuries, another priest says. I promise your wealth will be eternal. The video, released last month, is part of the Catholic Church's attempt to capitalize on Spain's poor economy to boost its otherwise dwindling numbers. And it appears it's had some initial success. Enrollment in seminaries here rose 4% last year, compared to falling 25% over the past decade. Bishop Josep Ángel Saiz Meneses commissioned an ad agency to help create this video and says he's thrilled with the result.
Durante dos días creo que fue el video más visto.
For 2 days, this was the most watched video in Spain, with hundreds of thousands of downloads. It went viral, and we've had journalists calling us from five continents. Venezuela has even asked for the copyright.
But church attendance is still falling in Spain, and it's tough to find young Spaniards willing to take a vow of celibacy for life, no matter what the economy is like.
I personally don't believe in God, so I wouldn't do that.
18-year-old Guillermo Fique and his friends skateboard off curbs in front of Madrid's soaring cathedral. An iPod blasts Spanish hip-hop, and his friend improvises a rap about corruption and banks. The jobless rate here is more than 50% for youth. Still, Guillermo says there's no chance he'd consider the seminary.
Why would you want to be a priest? I mean, in jail you get free food at also.
Even the bishop acknowledges it's a hard sell for today's youth.
No creo que ningún joven entre al seminario.
I don't think any youngster is really going to enter the seminary just for job security. That idea came from the marketing people. They put it in as a bit of provocation, to grab your attention, to shock you, and get you to watch the video.
And it worked for that. But the bishop says Europe's debt crisis could help his recruitment drive in another way. He's targeting people bewildered by bailouts and unemployment, people searching for what's really important. It's something even economists note about people in a recession.
They pass from a materialist to a post-materialist phase, where they start thinking more about quality of life, the meaning of life.
Gail Allard is a professor at Madrid's IE Business School.
The good thing about crisis is maybe that it awakens this other side of us and helps us to kind of step off the treadmill a bit and think about why we're here, you know, besides just paying a mortgage.
As for whether the church will benefit from that, Bishop Meneses shrugged.
Bueno, eso lo veremos el año que viene.
We'll have to see next year's numbers, he says. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
You're listening to NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. In this part of the program, a story of faith and the loss of it. Imagine being a minister and realizing you no longer believe in God. Your worldview, your friends, your community, your career, all suddenly in jeopardy. NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty introduces us to one minister in the Bible Belt who traveled the lonely road from faith to non-belief.
Teresa McBain has a secret, one she's terrified to reveal.
I'm currently an active pastor, and I'm also an atheist.
She glances nervously around the room. It's a Sunday. Normally, she'd be preaching at her church in Tallahassee, Florida. But here she is, sneaking away to the American Atheist Convention.
I live a double life. Feel pretty good on Monday, but by Thursday, when Sunday's right around the corner, I start having stomach aches, headaches, just knowing that I got to stand up and say things that I no longer believe in and portray myself in a way that's totally false.
It's taking a toll. 2 sermons every Sunday, singing hymns, praying for the sick, week after week. Her iPhone has become her confessor.
On my way to church again, another Sunday. Man, it's getting worse.
McBain made this recording in her car on the way to Lake Jackson United Methodist Church. It was weeks before the atheist conference.
How did I get myself in this mess? Sometimes I think to myself, if I could just go back a few years and not ask the questions, and just be one of those sheep and blindly follow, not know the truth, it'd be so much easier. Just keep my job. But I can't do that. I know it's a lie. I know it's false.
44-year-old Teresa McBain was raised a conservative Southern Baptist. Her dad was a pastor. She felt the call of God when she was 6. She had questions, of course, about conflicts in the Bible or the role of women, but she set her concerns aside. When she became a United Methodist pastor 9 years ago, she started asking sharper questions. She thought they'd make her faith stronger.
In reality, as I worked through them, I found that religion had so many holes in it that I just progressed through stages where I couldn't believe it.
The questions haunted her. Is Jesus the only way to God? Would a loving God torment people for eternity? Is there any evidence of God at all? And one day,
I just kind of realized, I mean, just a eureka moment, not an epiphany, but a eureka moment. I'm an atheist. I don't believe. And in the moment that I uttered that word, I stumbled and choked on that word atheist.
But it felt right. Online, McBain found the Clergy Project, an anonymous community of clergy who have lost their faith. Now she had allies, but no easy escape. She began applying for jobs. People would ask, why did she want to leave ministry? She worried about this as she drove around. She didn't know what to say.
So what the hell am I supposed to do? I mean, really, the options are work at something like Starbucks or McDonald's, and even there, they're going to ask those questions. And I could even clean houses and not make a great amount of money, but at least nobody would be asking me questions.
One Sunday, on her way to church, McBain realized she could no longer bear her double life.
I got to come out. I got to get out of it. It used to terrify me of what people's reaction would be, but it's been so long now, and I've done this for so long, I don't even care.
The sermon she gave that day was her last.
I'm here at the American Atheist Convention, where in just about 2.5 hours, I will be standing before a group sharing my story and coming out officially as an atheist.
March 26th. Bethesda, Maryland. McBain seems almost giddy.
She is still undercover.
I'm nervous, but at the same time, I'm so excited. I slept like a baby last night because I knew I wasn't going to have to live a lie anymore. Such freedom. Please come up.
My name is Teresa. I'm a pastor currently serving a Methodist church, at least up to this point. And I am an atheist.
The 1,500 people jump to their feet. They hoot and clap for more than a minute. McBain then apologizes to them for being, as she put it, a hater.
You were just those people. And I was the one on the right track. And you were the ones that were going to burn in hell. And I'm happy to say, as I stand before you right now, I'm going to burn with you.
Hi, Teresa. Hey,
Randy.
My name's Randy.
Hey, Randy.
Yeah. I got to tell you, that was one of the most moving things I've seen in years. I'm just getting choked up.
I was a born-again Christian up until 3 months ago, so yeah. Join the club.
I have never felt so appreciated and cared for. You know? New member, just been born. That's what it feels like.
2 days later, McBain returned to Tallahassee, to reality.
I didn't know how far or how
explosive her coming out would be. But again, nobody did.
McBain's husband, Ray.
The next morning we got up, I went to work, and my son Alex texted me and said it went viral. And that's when the local TV channel took it.
A local minister stepped down from her post just before announcing she is an atheist. A member of Lake.
By the time I got to the TV channel, there was 500 and something comments.
The majority of them, to begin with, were pretty hateful. For somebody who's been a good guy their whole life and been a people pleaser, it's really hard to imagine that overnight you're the bad guy.
McBain tried to see the church's district superintendent to explain, but he canceled the meeting. She left town briefly, and there, sitting alone in her hotel room, she turned on the iPhone.
So I'm sitting in Seattle, Sunday, April the 1st. I found out that the church has locked me out, that they're holding a secret meeting that I'm not supposed to know about. Man, I don't want to go home. I don't want to have to be in Publix or Walmart or somewhere and worry about who's going to see me and who's going to corner me and just tell me off.
But she did go home. People shunned her. Job interviews were canceled. Only two friends called on her. But her family was a refuge, even if they didn't all agree.
I believe in God, and I'll be honest, I pray for her every night. I got friends praying for her.
Ray McBain says he adores his wife and defends her right to disbelieve.
That's why I spent 23 years in the Army. That's why I'm still a police officer. We have freedom of speech and freedom of thought. And God never forced anybody to believe. So who am I to step up?
Yo.
I wanted to see the church at the center of her story, so I asked McBain to take me for a drive. It's Sunday morning.
Okay, here's the church coming up on the right. And we should have a fairly decent-sized crowd. We can't get in the parking lot, but we can at least loop around closer.
Does this make you a little nervous?
Yeah. I have butterflies.
This is the first time McBain has seen her church since she went public. It's 11:20, nearly time for the sermon. McBain's glad she's not inside.
Not because of the people or anything, but because if I were in there, I know what I would be doing, and that would be standing up and proclaiming something that I no longer believe in. So, yeah, I'm relieved that I don't have to do that.
She wants to leave before anyone sees us.
Let's see which way is the easiest to go.
Later, at home, I ask her, what do you miss?
I miss the music. Music has been a part of my life for a long time. And some of the hymns, I'll still catch myself singing them. I mean, they're beautiful pieces of music. And I miss the relationships. So, yeah, I do miss that. And I miss the ritual and the regularity of it. It's what I know. It's what I knew. And I still struggle with it. Life is just different.
I don't hear you say that you miss God.
No. No. I can't say that I do. Amazing grace,
how sweet the sound. From now on, Teresa McBain says, she's on her own. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
Why? Now we turn to Faith Matters. That is the part of the program where we talk about matters of faith and spirituality. We're running down the clock on our fifth anniversary celebration. And if you've listened to the program during this last few years, then you know that nearly every Friday, we've turned to people of faith from all traditions, backgrounds, and generations, including those who reject organized religion. And we've asked them to give us their take on the world and issues in the news, and to talk about how faith intersects with so many issues. So on this Friday, as we're wrapping up a week of celebration and reflection on the last 5 years, we asked faith leaders from different traditions who've been guests on the program to offer their blessings for the next 5 years. And we'll start with the one newcomer in the group. He is a young Christian poet. He's making quite a splash on YouTube.
I'm Jefferson Bethke. I'm 22 years old from Tacoma, Washington. And I am a poet, an artist, a writer. And I really enjoy trying to use those mediums to get people to think about Jesus differently. And I had a poem that I came out with in January of 2012 called Why I Hate Religion But Love Jesus that got a lot more views than I thought it would. And so I've tried to steward that platform well and continue to use that to get people to focus on him and not me. So yeah, when you read the scriptures, what you see is something that a lot of times we weren't taught when we were a kid. And what we were taught as a kid is that the Bible or the scriptures is this rule book, this moral code that you need to follow in order to attain good favor with God. But the beautiful part about the scriptures, when you truly understand them, is that Jesus is in every sentence, every object of the scriptures pointing back to himself. So the message that I would probably want to get out there in regards to hope and wisdom and faith that's been given to me that I've noticed is that it's not about us. It's not about our failures. It's not about our successes. It's not about how good enough we are for God. It's not about how bad enough we are for God. But in actuality, it's about what Jesus has done. It's about how good enough he was for God. And when you understand that, when you understand that he's the one that we're supposed to look at, not ourselves, then it stirs something in your heart that draws you outside of yourself into something bigger. And you start to realize what you were created for. And that's an intimate and personal relationship with God through Jesus.
Shalom. My name is Shmuel Hertzfeld, and I'm rabbi of Ohev Shalom, the National Synagogue in Washington, D.C. I'm not only sometimes a guest on Tell Me More, I'm also a huge fan and loyal listener of the show. And since you're also loyal fans of the show, I feel a very special connection with you, and I wanted to offer a blessing to all of us from the perspective of the Jewish tradition. The cardinal statement of Jewish faith is the prayer known as Shema. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. The rabbis understand that the word Shema should be translated as hear, as opposed to listen. Listen might mean that we're passively allowing the sound waves to enter into our ears. But hear means something else. It means that we're accepting that what we have heard, that we're in agreement with what we've heard, that we're committing ourselves with our hearts to do something about what we've heard. That's what we mean when we say, I hear you. So there are so many stories that come to our attention that are of a deep human value and really require us to get involved in the world and make a difference in society. I want to bless our audience that we all go beyond merely being loyal listeners, and instead we become loyal hearers. I close with a prayer from the Talmud. Talmud teaches that words that come from the heart enter into the heart. We all hear words every day. A lot of those words come from the heart. Let's take upon ourselves that it's our job to allow the words that we hear to truly enter into our hearts so that we can help transform the world.
This is Tell Me More from NPR News, and as we wrap up a week of celebrating our fifth anniversary on the air and move into our sixth year, we're listening to faith leaders give their blessings for the future. You just heard Rabbi Shmuel Hertzfeld of Ohev Shalom, the National Synagogue in Washington, D.C., and Christian poet Jefferson Bethke. We now hear from those in the Buddhist, Evangelical, Christian, and Islamic faiths.
I am Amina McLeod, and I am the director of the Islamic World Studies Program and a professor in the Department of Religious Studies at DePaul University here in Chicago. To people who are just coming to know about Islam and its many cultural traditions, in the past 5 years, much of that attention has been negative attention. And I would hope in the next 5 years that Muslims are able to convey the message that in Islam, one central belief is that God made people in tribes so that they could come to know one another and to vie in good deeds. And that in these good deeds, we pay attention to the communities around us and that we resist the temptation to denigrate one another. I think all of our faiths extol the need for us to come together and do the good instead of being comfortable with so much negative rhetoric, and that we take care of some of the social ills we have surrounding us, especially the increasing poverty, the need to care for the elderly and the children.
My name is Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, and I preside over the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, which is the Hispanic Evangelical Association, approximately 40,100 churches strong, serving this wonderful and booming Hispanic faith demographic within the American religious landscape. I stand convinced that in the midst of a very tiring time, a time in the past few years that has been filled with angst and consternation, flux, and even to a great degree despair, I believe that the best is yet to come. There's hope, and that hope lies embedded in the reality of the cross. Now, that cross is not just vertical or horizontal. It is both vertical and horizontal. Vertically, we stand connected to God, to the kingdom of God, to divine principles, to his glory. Horizontally, we stand connected to each other, to humanity, to our fellow man, to neighborhood and communities and families and relationships. Life is a cross. It is both righteousness vertically and justice on a horizontal plane. It is both sanctification and service, covenant and community, holiness and humility, orthodoxy and orthopraxy. It is both the New Jerusalem and Washington, D.C. It is both the message of salvation and righteousness of Dr. Billy Graham and the prophetic activism of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. What if, in America, we can finally reconcile the message of Billy Graham with the message of Martin Luther King Jr.? Then we will see faith that reconciles and does not pull apart, a faith that goes way beyond the agendas of the donkey or the elephant, but really enunciates the agenda of the lamb, where our moniker is do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly before God. So I pray that the strength of the Father and that the grace of the Son and the anointing of God's Holy Spirit will empower and enable us to live life both vertically and horizontally in his name.
Hello, congratulations on your anniversary and best wishes for the upcoming year. My name is Tenzin Lamo. I'm a Tibetan Buddhist nun ordained in India by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. A strange turn of events for someone born in an Irish Catholic family in Pennsylvania. By the time I was 20, I had realized that Catholic faith wasn't the right one for me, though it is for many. I didn't realize, though, that I would go 25 years looking for another faith to believe in. During those years of raising three great kids and having a life of privilege, I still knew there was a rich dimension missing in my life. And this realization strengthened as I went through a divorce and then the loss of my mother and father and sister and family members in quick succession. All of this has created in me the wish for you today, as expressed in a verse of the Buddha who walked around India teaching 2,600 years ago. He said, "Praise and blame, gain and loss, pleasure and sorrow, these come and go like the wind. To be happy, rest like a great tree amidst them all." So what allows that great tree to rest? In my mind, it's a strong, clear, profound sense of faith in something. That's what I wish you. Whether your faith is secular in morality or in a good cause such as helping needy children or injured animals or the earth, or whether it's religious, may your faith be strong and allow you transcendence over any of the difficulties of your life so that you can live, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, with courage, compassion, and awareness. This is my heartfelt wish for you. Thank you.
We just heard from Tibetan Buddhist nun Tenzin Lamo, the Reverend Samuel Rodriguez. He is an evangelical Christian minister, Islamic scholar Amina McLeod, Rabbi Shmuel Hertzfeld of Ohev Shalom, the National Synagogue, that's an Orthodox synagogue in Washington, D.C., and Christian poet Jefferson Bethke. And we'd like to thank all of our faith leaders for their blessings.
The Catholic Archbishop of Philadelphia announced today that he is removing five priests from ministry. Charles Chaput said investigations into other priests accused of abuse will continue. But as NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports, victims' advocates are not satisfied.
Last February, a grand jury in Philadelphia issued a scathing report saying that 37 priests had been allowed to stay in ministry after they had been accused of abusing or acting inappropriately with children. Some of the priests had moved or left the diocese or were already out of ministry, but the archdiocese suspended 26 of them while it investigated. Today, Archbishop Chaput announced the preliminary results. Five priests are being removed from ministry for abuse or crossing boundaries. Three priests have been exonerated and will return to ministry. One priest has died. As for the rest, Chaput said, those investigations are not complete and he'll decide their fates in the next few weeks or longer. The Archbishop said this won't remove the pain, and he apologized.
When a child is harmed, the church has failed. When trust is lost, the church has failed. When the whole community suffers as a result, the church has failed.
Gina Maisto-Smith, a former child abuse prosecutor, is heading the church's investigation. She said her team reviewed more than 400,000 documents and interviewed more than 225 witnesses. She said the church did not try to influence or direct their investigation.
I was given total freedom, constant support, and unfettered access to both individuals and documents at every step of the process.
This was really a dog and pony show with very little nutritional content.
Terrence McKiernan is at bishopsaccountability.org, a watchdog group.
People need details about these allegations. People need to know the reasons why a person has been kept in ministry or removed from ministry.
Instead, the Archbishop listed a few names and vague details, whether there was evidence of either abuse or violating the, quote, standards of ministerial behavior and boundaries, but nothing more. The Archbishop said he was being careful to protect the alleged victims and to abide by a gag order in a criminal trial already underway, explanations that McKiernan does not buy. Chaput also promised vigorous reforms so that priests do not slip through the cracks in the future, although watchdog groups say those, too, seem a little vague. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.